Stevie Weeby here. Thanks for checking out the audio format of the show. You're about to listen to the Margaret Cho episode. I met Margaret back in the day at Maker Studios. I was with my brother and she happened to be there. I've always really looked up to her and respected her, and she's paved the way for a lot of these upcoming Asian acts. She's the original, like she's had her own HBO special. She was on television before all these other Asians were, like in the 90s. And what I liked about her interview was when she talked about how she came up in the comedy scene in Frisco. She actually started when she was 14 years old. And I just enjoyed her overall stories of coming up in the entertainment field as a Korean American. And I hope you enjoyed the whole episode. Peace.
Yay!
안녕하세요. 나는 광우예요.
네.
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 Back to
와요,
another episode
와요.
Of the Stevie Weeby Show, episode 100.
네.
아 좋아요 이거.
잘 됐어.
We have a very, very special guest tonight for our 100th episode. Please welcome comedian Margaret Cho.
네, 네 감사합니다. 네, 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 네. 네. 감사합니다.
잘 있었어요?
네, 잘 있었어요. 네. 네.
이거 좋아, 이거 집에 좋아요?
아주 좋아요. 네, 너무 좋아요.
조금에 이거.
근데 아주 편안해요. 아주 편안해.
주말?
편안해. 컴퓨터.
편해. 어, 알았어요.
아주 좋아. 아주 편안해. 그 아주 you know, very welcoming.
네, 이거 사람 미남이야. 이거 좋아?
좋아요.
미국 사람 좋아?
미국 사람 좋아요. 네.
왜?
아주 좋아요. 이거. 미국 사람에.
오케이.
너무 뭐 우리 다 미국 사람인데.
네.
다 미국 사람에.
이거 잘 생겼어? 이거.
어, 아주 잘 생겼어. 아주 잘. 근데 미국 사람은 all handsome. 아주 잘생겼네.
Okay, so that was, so interpret what you said the last 2 minutes.
Well, I said song. I said when you came in, I said I was like excited.
Yeah.
And then I said your song was very good.
Yeah.
And that it sounded really good. And then I said it's very comfortable here.
Yeah. And then I asked you, do you like my place?
Yeah. And I said it was.
I said it was small.
Small, but it was 편안해.
But it was comfortable.
편안해.
Oh, okay.
아주 편안해.
So, okay, explain that word. It means comfortable in 한국 in Korean.
편안해. It's 편안해. Like 편안해. Yeah. It's like it's relaxing 편안해. To be here.
Oh.
편안해. Like it's like you know, like sometimes you know when you like the old men go in the swimming pool and they go ah 좋다.
Yes.
They like
yes,
swim. They go ah 좋다.
Yeah.
Have you 좋다. Been? Ah 좋다. So that's I'm so old. I started doing that in the swimming pool. Like I swim like. Oh, 좋다. 좋다. 아, 좋다.
Have you been to a 한국 sauna?
요 찜질방. Yeah.
With the men and women?
They don't have like the, well, nowadays they have like ones where like families can go, but that's not where like the baths are. But you can go into like the salt cave.
Wow.
You know where they have like the stone, the gemstone cave.
I love those.
And so those are those are not unisex. They're like mixed sex. You could have like men and women in there. But for the wet bath, it's it's segregated.
Yeah.
For the wet bath, it's men and women on each side.
And there's a steam room, and then there's showers.
Yeah.
And then the showers where you sit down, and then you can
you could pour the water bucket. Over your head in the bucket, which I think is really nice. But yeah, I love chimjibang, but it's very controversial because I have so many.
뭐야 이거 뭐야?
찜질방 뭐야? 그거 거기 스파.
Spa. That's the name of it.
찜질방.
Oh, okay.
찜질 is like the bath.
Oh,
and then the,
yeah. I love it.
Pang is like a broom.
Yeah.
You know, like a karaoke place is norebang.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So any pang is like a broom.
Yeah. Pang, pang. Oh, I know that. Yeah. I got in real trouble. I was with Bob, my brother. He brought me to a spa, the Korean one.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I was thinking, but I tried to do a vlog. So I was walking through there, and then this one Hanguk saw him and goes, "Yeah, shikya,
yeah,
you go moya." So yeah. He said, "Hey, you little like, what are you doing, man?"
Yeah.
And so he like walked up to me, and like we almost got into it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you know that they're from a different.
That's not cool.
Yeah, that's
it's not cool.
And I realized it wasn't cool until like I realized, well, this is like not cool that what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I had to erase. I think I got his gochu.
Oh.
Yeah.
Gochu.
Gochu. Or,
yeah.
Is it chaji?
Chaji is a vagina.
Okay, what's gochu?
Gochu is penis.
Oh, yeah, gochu.
Or it's like a pickle. It's a pepper.
Like a...
It's what it is. It literally, a gochu is like actually a pepper,
well,
but it's also
gochu,
yeah.
I got like real quick gochu.
Yeah, really fast gochu, like really, really fast. He got pissed.
Well, I had to show him. He go, "Bot," and like, "I want to see." And I go... And then I like, "Oh, okay, so this is, I'm erasing it."
Mm-hmm.
And then finally he goes, "Okay."
Yeah, everybody pissed.
Yeah, that was so wrong. So I apologize if you're out there, if you happen to see this. I don't know.
I'm surprised that they're pissed because it's like usually they don't really care. But,
yeah,
you know, it is, I guess maybe it's newer that people would go in there with the cameras and stuff.
Was wrong for me to do.
Well, it's all right. I have get in trouble because I have tattoos. Don't you get in trouble for having tattoos in there?
Oh, my God. I was riding the Red Line Metro.
Mm-hmm.
And we are at Wilshire, like near Koreatown.
Yeah.
And there's Harmony.
Yeah, Harmony.
She walks in like. And sits right next to me and goes, "Hanguk sarimyo," and I go, uh-huh. "Nah," and then I could tell her energy got weird because she kept like looking at my tattoo.
Yeah, and they get scared.
No, she started praying.
She was like this.
She was like, "Oh, hananim."
Oh no, so sad.
I didn't know she was praying for me.
She's praying for
you. She was praying for my soul.
Isn't that sad? Yeah. It's so sweet.
And then she came up to me and goes, "Yeah, you go. Where you go? Where you go? Napun? Yeah, you go."
No, it's so sad.
So she said, "This is bad. What you have on your arm?"
Because you know why?
I don't know.
Because of the Yakuza. Okay, you know, like the Yakuza is like mostly Korean.
I thought it was a Japanese.
Well, it's
gang.
The Japanese gangs, but they start they really hire like Korean people. Yakuza is like a lot of Yakuza are actually Korean.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so then they came into Korea and rebuilt the country from organized crime in 1950 when Korea was like decimated by the war.
Yeah, yeah.
And so a lot of like the Yakuza, you can know them by tattoos because they make you get tattoos.
Mm.
And so that was how they would like see if you were in the Yakuza if you had tattoos.
Oh.
So everybody from that generation assumes you're a gangster.
You're a gang.
Gangpe.
Gangpe.
That's what they call
That's what my mom used to call my dad.
Gangpe.
Yeah, he's a gangpe.
Gangpe. Is he a gangpe?
Well, he worked in Korea, my dad, to get his hustle, he would shine shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So he would see the ships come in.
Yeah.
And then he would go down the harbor and then like, shine their shoes, and he also like punk guys for their money and stuff. Like he was poor.
Yeah.
So gangpe means street hoodlum.
Yeah, gangpe is like just like gangster, but street hoodlum. But it's like you know, it's bad. Well, you know, like our that generation, like my dad.
Are they from Seoul?
No, they're from Busan.
Busan.
We're like the fish people. We're like the dirty fish people.
Train to Busan.
They're all zombies.
Yeah, zombies. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
It's really good.
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's all zombies.
Have you seen it, Bryce? So check out
it's
Train
really
to
good.
Busan.
It's all, I love when the baseball players get it.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
They're all the baseball players.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so
that
cute.
That was awesome.
But
explain what Busan is in
Busan is like,
Korea.
It's like shitty fishing village town. It's like a big city, but it's just like, it's where a lot of shady shit goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was just in Busan 3 weeks ago.
You were just there?
Yeah. And I was coming through.
What were you doing over there?
Like I just was coming through to go from Japan. So I was like I'm going from China to Japan, and mm-hmm. so I had to go through Busan. And the thing that happens in Busan, there's all sorts of weird like drug activity that happens, or like weird like shady like duty free stuff. Like there was just weird stuff happening like at my gate. Like all of these Koreans were like had these bags, but they were filled with like cosmetics that they were taking off the boxes and throwing out the cosmetics and putting other cosmetics inside. So it was really weird. This is like in line of like to get on the plane. And then I got to
This is at the airport?
At the airport, like in the line to get on the plane. That's they're sketchy. Doing all this weird sketchy duty free like bait and switch. All these Koreans. And then when I got to Fukuoka from Busan, they're like, oh, you came from Busan? Okay, come in here. They actually took me behind into like a room.
To pat you down?
No, they like took off my like clothes and like looked in all of my stuff because they're like Koreans are bringing drugs in.
Oh, and then your tattoos didn't
help.
Yeah,
and they were like, oh, you're shady.
Because you're pretty sleeved up.
I'm
like,
really like tattooed.
I have a lot. You have more than I thought.
Yeah, I have
like,
a lot.
She's got a lot of ink.
But I got really searched like, you know, because they... Damn. Koreans are shady in Busan.
They are shady. Koreans are kind of shady, huh?
Koreans are shady in general, but especially in Busan.
Yeah. My dad's had 8 strokes.
Oh, okay.
Like, why do so many Koreans get, like, heart attacks or strokes?
I think it has stress, you know, and smoking.
Tambe.
Pyogu, hagu.
Sul
mashimun.
Beer.
Also, I think that stress is a big motivator to like, you know, any kind of like disease. But you know, my family, we usually get like weird diseases, like like my grandfather died because he couldn't swallow anything. So that was a weird one because he couldn't eat and he couldn't like, I think he got really dehydrated, and so that like his like, you know, like his all the peristalsis wasn't working, and that was a weird one.
My dad has the same thing.
Oh really?
Right now
can't swallow.
He has a tube.
That sucks.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Yeah.
So he can't talk either.
Oh.
So when I come visit him, he's like,
oh, that's really sad. That's hard.
So my mom's just a warrior.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know my brother.
Yeah, of course.
We all look up to you. Anyone who's seen comedy or has just had a television in the 90s knows who you are. Like, if you're Korean, you're like, that's it. That's the one.
Aww.
But I'm worried because my brother's doing well, but I'm worried about his health as well.
Well, you know, I think that it's smoking really is, you know, not the best thing.
Yeah.
I think for Koreans especially.
He vapes now.
Yeah,
is
you know,
that
that's better? I don't know. I guess so. It must be.
Yeah.
It must be better because you're not, it's not the same, I think.
Yeah.
Because smoking is so bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've smoked and quit many times.
I smoked for 14 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we're both sober. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I... marijuana for many, many years, mm-hmm. and I couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And so I think I'm better off this way. At least I'm present. One thing I wanted to ask you because I looked at you as like a sensei in the comedy world, like, because my brother still hasn't dropped a special.
He should. I don't know
and
why.
Because we're talking about that. And so how do we get Bob to, how do we motivate him?
Well, he should.
Because Dr. Ken just dropped one.
I know, which is great.
Yeah, but and I want my brother to drop one too.
He should.
Right, Bryce?
I don't know why he hasn't. I don't understand why he hasn't.
Can you reach out to him?
Yeah, I will.
And like what? Okay, because I had this on my questions.
Yes.
You've dropped a grip of specials, right? How many specials have you dropped?
I think probably 8 or 9. I can't remember. Quite a few.
8 or 9 specials.
I don't know. There's like a bunch of them.
HBO, you got several. You got, weren't you just in Just for Laughs in 1993 in Montreal?
Yeah.
You have a Comedy Central one.
Yeah.
Several.
I have quite a few. I've got like a couple of theatrical ones too.
Yeah, where but you add skits in it too. Like
That was a Comedy Central one.
Yeah,
that's
I love
a good
that.
One.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, you know, it's stressful to do, but you should do it. I mean, everybody should do it. All comics should do it.
What does it take for someone who has not dropped a special but's been in the game for 10, 15 years? What does it take to drop a special?
Well, I think he's just got to do it. I mean, all he has to say is that he wants to do it, and then he has the material. You know, the thing about specials
is... How much material you need?
You need an hour. That's it. He's got it. He's got many hours.
Let's see. You can't mess up, though, huh?
You can, because usually they'll film it twice, and then they'll edit it together.
Oh, did you know that? Oh, okay. Sorry, yeah. Bryce.
So usually they'll film it twice, you know, and that's kind of... Some people do it other ways, too. Sometimes they'll film it, like, four or five times. I think Chris Rock did it, like, four or five times in different cities, and mm-hmm. then he filmed the all of them and then edited all the together. So there's different ways to do it. But
so once you film that material, you have to write new material, right?
Yeah, but it's okay to also not, too.
You could do material again. Like, if you have that on your special, you could do it still.
Yeah, you know, Brian Regan, who I love, he does this thing at the end of his concerts where he'll do requests and he'll do material that... people have asked him to do. Like, that's a great thing for people that have seen all of his specials. You know, that's really fun.
Yeah. Can you somehow text my brother or pull him aside? Because I'm worried that he's not ever going to drop one.
I know. I will. I didn't even know, like, he didn't do it. I would have assumed that he would have many times, many years. Weird. He's so good.
I mean, Rogan gets on him.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan says, like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
like,
I don't understand.
You're the dude.
He's so good.
Why don't you just go?
And he's so funny. I mean, it's like...
But he looks up to you. What are you talking about?
I love
you're
him.
You're the good one.
Yeah, we're all good.
Yeah. Well, how did you even get into, like, a comedy?
Well, I didn't have anything else I wanted to do. I didn't have anything to fall back on. I just wanted to be a comedian.
And then when did you start? Like, did you start hitting open mics?
Yeah.
Like, but like in Frisco?
In San Francisco, I was at the doing clubs, like the Other Cafe, which was a comedy club.
Yeah.
That was it was actually, you know, at that time, comics like Dana Carvey were performing there.
I remember Dana Carvey. Yeah.
And Bobcat Goldthwait.
Big fan.
And Paula Poundstone.
Okay, I don't know if I heard of that one, but yeah.
Yeah, lots of different
Bobcat,
people.
Bobcat, yeah.
Yeah, and they were doing shows there, and I had a theater teacher who would sign me up for open mics, and I had a comedy partner in the beginning.
Yeah.
Who was Sam Rockwell, who's now a very famous actor.
Yeah, Sam, the actor.
Yeah, he won an Oscar last year.
Sam Rockwell.
Yeah. But now I just do it by myself.
Eight, nine specials, dude.
I don't know. Maybe more. It could have been more.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Okay, so, man, you are so, like, you're, like, how do you prepare mentally? Like, because to me, it's a huge theater, and, like, do you get nervous, or?
No, I mean, it's just weird, because there's sometimes it's, like, you know, like, I did one special for, like, this was weird. It was for, Disney World, and it was
Disney
a special
World.
That was going to be shown across Disney World. It was like Disney World, or it was MGM Grand. It was like one of those amusement park.
Orlando, Florida?
In Orlando. It was in Orlando. And I had to do the special, but I didn't realize I couldn't swear through it, and I was so dirty. And they broadcast it throughout the entire park. I probably wasn't Disney World. I think it was MGM Grand.
Wow.
And then I got in all this trouble.
Oh, my goodness.
So, because I was so dirty for like an hour.
Oh, so they couldn't air it?
Yeah, but they had blasted it all across the park anyway.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There was all these problems. I mean, but, you know, you just do what you do.
I mean, like, because I know how Korean parents are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you first started, before you started making it, like, were they kind of like scared? Like, 이거 뭐야? 이거
뭐야?
Yeah.
이거 뭐야? They were very freaked out. But but then my father went to a mudang. Do you know what a mudang is in Korea?
몰라요.
몰라. Mudang is
mudang 뭐야?
It's a shaman. It's like a mist.
Mudang is a shaman.
Mudang is like a shaman. It's like a, you know, a fortune teller.
Like a witch.
Yeah, like a witch.
Like a witch.
He went to a witch.
Wait, a Korean witch?
A Korean witch.
I didn't even know this existed.
Yeah, they have them.
In Korea?
In Korea. He went to one.
Do you know about this, Bryce? Dude, don't tune out on us, man. Just because we're talking about Korean stuff, you tune out? Korean witch.
She said that I was, this is like when I was like 16. So he went to a mudang. And she said that I would be an international star in 2 years. And then he was like, ooh. And then he was like.
It's like a fortune teller.
He's like, oh, okay.
Dawn money.
No, dawn money. So then then he realized like, well, you know, maybe there's something else to that into this. So yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
He started to be supportive because a fortune teller told him.
And he started being supportive because he saw dollar signs as well.
Yeah. And then I was on TV right away.
Why are they so...
It's super... Well, super like status, money driven.
Why are Koreans in that generation so like superficial like that?
Because they were so poor.
Yeah,
because
but dude, no one cared. Like, my mom would cry. Like, their kid, going to Harvard. What are you doing? And she would cry.
Because in Korea, this is why. Mm-hmm. There's only two colleges
where
that you can go in Seoul. There's Yonsei and Seoul University. And if you don't get in...
Can you do a story, please? Sorry.
If you don't get into those universities, you're fucked. So you basically have the whole country of young people trying to get into two universities. And then if you don't get in, it's over. Like, your life is over. Then you're going to have to do whatever, like, nobody wants to do, you know, for their work. So it's like, that's what they're... So when somebody... is able to come to the United States and send their child to Harvard, it's like the dream of...
It's like the lottery.
Yeah, even bigger than winning the lottery. It's like the best thing that could happen.
But my question is, why do they compare it with another person's kid?
Because they were always like fighting over rice, and now it's like now the stakes have risen. Now they're fighting over scholarships and children and majors and who's going to be the most successful child.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Don't you think that kind of pressure on a kid, especially nowadays?
Yeah.
Like that dude, the Korean kid at Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
He just snapped, man.
Yeah. I mean...
So don't you think that has a lot to do with the parents? Because
I think
the
that
media
has,
didn't spin it that way.
Well, that has a lot to do with also the way that Koreans and Asians in general don't pay attention to mental illness. And they don't catch it right away. And they don't encourage you to get help or get, you know, take medication.
Yeah.
And get... counseling. You know, they really look down on people reaching out for help, or they just shut down. They're like, we don't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, we don't know how to handle this. We're just going to just...
That's crazy.
Like, lay off and not do anything.
That's not a solution, though, is it?
No.
It makes it worse.
It makes it worse because then they just shut down, which is even worse. When that happened, too, I mean, he was Korean-American. He was American. He just happened to be of Korean descent, but he was an American kid.
Yeah, yeah.
But even South Korea was like... Oh, sorry.
Oh, man. I mean, it's a tragic event.
even Korea was like saying like, we're sorry, but I think it was most of it was really about Koreans' denial of mental illness and trying to face it.
You know, yeah, I agree 100%. And another thing I noticed is the parents didn't even get interviewed. The Korean community harbored them.
Yeah, it was such a shameful...
Shame.
Shame, and it's just like, we can't even face this. Like, we cannot even...
It's too crazy.
It's too terrible to even comprehend.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a nightmare. I mean, of course, it's not just Koreans. It's a nightmare across the country. There's so many parents who have to deal with this kind of stuff with their kids. But that situation was very terrible.
I'm not an advocate for drugs or weed, but for that kid, Cho Song, for his particular situation, I think if he smoked like some good chronic or like you know, like he smoked a blunt and like it, maybe he wouldn't have done it. Like,
or
he would have like chilled out, or
yeah,
if he was like into skateboarding, like if he was into an activity, or like he had one good friend,
if he could channel that into something, or if he had gotten the proper medication, you know.
So he was psychotic.
I think he had a chemical imbalance that was causing him to have very, you know, disturbed behavior.
Yeah,
and so if he had gotten the right help, you know, that
or
maybe,
if he had a girlfriend.
Yeah,
don't
I mean, I
think
a lot of his anger was, it was very, you know, incels.
No girls, incels.
He was an incel.
Incels, dude. Like, now we're going to be on the incel tip.
Because
I just discovered this on the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
And I try to convince Bob that we're both incels.
You're not.
No,
because
like,
so.
I'm five, I'm short, you know, I'm short, and I'm not a Chad. A Chad is like... the opposite of an incel. It's like, he might be a Chad. You're a good looking tall guy, huh? Yeah. But yeah.
What's that, Bryce? Time for that? Yes. Yep. Okay, now word from our sponsor for this episode. Our sponsor is Blue Chew. Blue Chew is a penis enhancement pill. If you're a lonely incel, like probably many of our listeners, you're going to love Blue Chew because you'll really enjoy your masturbation experience. So you'll take the chew, put it in your mouth, and in a couple minutes later, like that. And then you could actually have more fun playing with this. So you could have a Blue Chew pill and then actually have hours of enjoyment using a toy like this, and you'll really enjoy it even more. Okay? So if you want to support the show, support our sponsors as well. Go visit Blue Chew, BLUECHEW.com, and get your first shipment free when you use the special promo code STEBEE, just like the show, STEEBEE, to try it free. You can't go wrong. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Okay? You'll have fun, and you'll be rock hard. Thank you. All right, Margaret?
I think Chad is more of a state of mind than it is a physical type.
Really?
I think Chad is like, you know, I mean, look at like, you know, the size is never really a precursor of attractiveness, I don't think. And I don't think that it necessarily signals whether somebody's going to be, have like some sort of like sexual prowess or, I don't know. But yeah. I feel like incels, from what I understand of it, it's a lot of men who are very afraid and unable to break out of the fear.
You know, that's crazy you brought that up, because when you said that last statement, I thought of one kid and one kid only, Elliot Roger from Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. He was half Asian and half white.
Yes.
But you guys heard about this kid? He had such an expectation, like, I don't know why the girls just don't come up to me. I mean, I'm the perfect alpha male. But he expected women to come up to him.
Well, I think that he just was enraged at women and enraged at his inability to connect. And then, you know, was just going to take his revenge somehow. But, I mean, that awkwardness and that fear that come around, like, you know, building relationships, I think that's natural to everyone. You know, nobody is immune to those feelings, but I think sometimes people get really stuck in that.
Yeah, I think that his hatred, he had a hatred specifically towards pretty blonde sorority girls.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he did his rampage, he didn't even get any sorority girls. He like knocked on the, you heard about this? He knocked on the sorority thing. They didn't answer it. And then he like shot at two just random girls on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, well, why? And then he drove his BMW to that major street, Isla Vista, whatever, and then just shot at random people.
Yeah.
So I just don't understand, like, Do you think that was a mental illness as
well? Yeah, I think definitely. I mean, it's like a mental break. It's a bunch of things. It's that, and it's access to firearms. It's easy access to weapons. It's the kind of isolation that makes you feel like you can kind of do anything like that, you know? And then it's also the people who've done it before him. There's been a lot of instances of that. So when that kind of stuff happens, it causes this chain reaction where people think this is a solution now. I can actually do this.
Yeah. I mean, I felt that kind of pain as well, like in college, like,
of course.
I'm alone. I'm alone in my dorm room.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, and then like, you know, but it's like, I had never thought about doing that.
No. And as
I would just be like, I want to write a poem. I want to write a song or
it's like something. You find ways to cope with it. And then as you get older, as I'm in my age now, I'm like, I actually like to be alone. I prefer it. Yeah, I prefer it.
Well, I have a girlfriend, but I like the alone time as well, like just so I could write and
do your thing and you know, spend time with yourself, which is very, I mean, it becomes rare when you're older. It's weird. You get less time for you.
Yeah. So do you think that, so how, what's the solution here? Like, because there's going to be more, it freaks me out even more if it's an Asian kid. I'm like, it hits home. Like,
yeah,
whoa.
Because it's like it's very hard because of all of the pressures that come with being Asian. You know, there's always these built in kind of neuroses that exist already. It's tough.
Yeah. Do you think that if those two cases went for Asian girls on campus, it'd be because they always went for the blonde or do you think that
maybe
been better? Like,
I don't know, you know, I think maybe it's just what it was is that they had kind of built up an expectation or imagined a scenario that didn't come out the way that they wanted.
Yeah.
And so they weren't allowing for this possibility to, you know, happen or, you know, maybe they just thought about it too hard or the awkwardness made them like too ostracized. There was something going wrong.
Like in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The inability to connect.
Yeah.
It's hard.
If I were them, I mean, because technology is so awesome now, I would just, it's probably easier to be an incel in college because you have the Xbox, mm-hmm. you have PlayStation, you could play video games.
Right.
They could actually make a living on Twitch, you know?
Yeah.
So I would like transfer that frustration. I'd be like, you know what? Okay, I can't get any girls, but I'm going to stay in this room and get good at War of Warcraft.
Yeah.
or whatever
that
money,
is,
dude,
you know,
right?
And that's a,
right,
you know, that's a pastime.
Yeah.
For sure.
But we didn't have that because this was in the 90s
mm-hmm.
for me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just interesting. Yeah, I didn't think we'd be talking about this, but it's something that has fascinated me and I feel for them. Like,
yeah.
And I feel like it's not that bad. That span of time is so short. There goes life beyond that. You know,
yeah.
Like you're not going to be in college forever.
No, and those feelings are so strong at that age. You know, people have such intense emotions and they don't
hormones.
Their hormones and it's surging and they don't realize that it's kind of like it's a short time that you're going to be that way.
I just masturbated.
I mean, yeah, that's creative.
You know, because you masturbate and then you're like, oh,
then
okay.
Then you forget.
Yeah,
you fall
feel
asleep.
Normal. Yeah. I just masturbate.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
That's your productive way to deal with it.
I don't know how productive it is.
Yeah, it is. It's good. It's productive.
You think so?
Yep.
Yeah, this is great. I can't believe Margaret Cho's in here.
Yeah.
I was tripping out. I was like, this is our 100th episode. And
yeah.
I'm like, man, that'd be great.
It's awesome.
Margaret Cho could to get on here. You were on a show in 1994, All American Girl,
mm-hmm.
and everyone in the Korean community, like everyone knew about you. They're like, oh, there's a Korean on
there's
TV.
There's a Korean on TV.
She's on ABC.
Yeah.
And so, like, can you talk about that experience of like auditioning for
it?
Well,
it was. I created the show. I was not the writer, but I was one of the creators. It was built around my persona as my stand-up or whatever, but it wasn't really exactly. Mm-hmm. It was just created around me. So I actually didn't audition for it, which was good.
Mm-hmm.
But I did the show, and mm-hmm. it was very hard because...
In what ways?
It was the time was right after the riots. So the
Ooh.
Korean community was really paranoid of having images of themselves in the media. And they didn't like me because I just done a comedy special for HBO and I was so rude and so dirty in
That's
my special.
Good. You're
but
breaking
the Koreans,
stereotypes.
Koreans were just appalled.
Why?
You know, all
what
these like moksanims were like, oh no.
Oh,
they were like really,
what
really
they
appalled.
Expect, though? What do they want?
They wanted a guy. They wanted a guy and they wanted maybe somebody who was more of an upstanding citizen, you know, but I was just so dirty as a comedian.
That's why we all loved you.
Yeah. But it was the young people who did, but not the older people.
Yeah.
They were really furious. So it was hard to get support around the show because there were so many people who were just really against what I was doing. But what's great is all those people died. So now I'm the elder generation now, which I'm very happy to be, which is good.
Yeah. What was it like just like showing up to set and like, was it like a life-changing experience? Like the moment you like, it was on the air.
Yeah. I mean, we had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun on the show and a lot of people watched and
mm-hmm.
it was, I think it was really, it was interesting because we were so excited to be there. And this was a different time in television because there was only four channels. So if you think about it, this is before
NBC,
cable.
ABC, yeah. CBS.
Fox.
And Fox.
That was it.
That's it.
And this is like before the WB. In the CW, and before like cable really took off.
It was one of the main things.
Yeah, it was one of the main. I mean, there was pay cable.
Yeah.
But there was like, and there was a little bit of like MTV and stuff, but it wasn't what it is today.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't as like much like programming on the rest of it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so
yeah.
it was a very big deal to be on one of the big channels.
I mean, what's it like being a Korean American like on like a major sitcom? Like, did you have to deal with like the higher ups? Like, did they like?
They didn't really understand. I mean, they were like trying to see like whether our numbers were going to be good enough to be like, you know, because they were trying to see is like, is an Asian show going to actually work? That was like the main question.
But did they say like, oh, can you be more Asian? Like, that's what
well,
I meant.
Well, yeah,
like,
part yeah, of that yeah. is like, well, because they wanted to like see if like, are we Asian enough? Are we authentic enough? And that was like the weird thing too, is that mm-hmm. there's no barometer for authenticity for white people. You don't ask yeah. white people to see like, is this accurate?
Yeah,
and they're like,
yeah,
they're like
yeah.
these white people being really white, you know,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
they don't ask that of anybody else, but
right.
for us there's always this thing of like, is this authentic? This is why I think that
That's
Crazy
so weird.
Rich Asians is such a success, because
I liked it.
I love it.
I have you watched it?
I loved it.
But it
I think
fun.
It's really a success because nobody can say, is that really authentic? Because nobody knows.
Because they're hella rich.
They're hella rich. Nobody
they're on li- boats. And
nobody
everything.
Lives like that. So
yeah,
we're not really sure. So that question goes out the window, because nobody can say, well, is this really authentic? You know, because
yeah.
they always question like minorities.
Yeah.
Is this authentic? You know, like,
yeah.
and that's like a weird thing to ask of people who are artists. Like,
Well, of course,
it's authentic because it's our story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But to ask sort of like for verification
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
is a strange way of like saying, well, does this legitimize your existence? I don't know, because we don't ask that of white people. See, this is like my thing now is like, ask everything of white people that they have asked of us.
See, you guys? Let's ask you guys then, huh?
Authentic?
Yeah. Are you guys being authentic? Just kidding. I love you, man. That's so awesome, man. Like, and then like, as far as your other, who did you get inspiration from as far as your comedy as well? Like, who'd you look up to? Like Carlin and...
Harlan?
George Carlin.
Carlin?
Yeah.
Oh, I love George Carlin.
Yeah.
He was great. He was a great guy and also a great comedian. Mm-hmm. I love Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
I really loved, I love Paula Poundstone. She was really amazing. Mm-hmm. Then, I mean, I always loved Jerry Seinfeld. I loved Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah. Oh,
she was
did,
really cool.
She did stand-up?
Yeah, for years. She was a
Rosie
big stand-up.
Rosie O'Donnell
yeah.
did?
Yeah.
Did you know this?
She was a big stand-up, yeah. yeah.
So
she gave me a lot of jobs.
Yeah,
she helped me
yeah.
a lot.
Like, back then, like in the 90s, early 2000s, late 90s, like, did you, like, were you at the Comedy Store? Or like?
I was at the Improv mostly, and
uh-huh.
then I was on the road. A lot.
Yeah.
And then I was at Largo in the 90s.
That was popping, huh?
That was popping.
That's like near Melrose?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
That was
describe what Largo
deal.
Is to the viewers.
Well, Largo is sort of like the alternative scene
mm-hmm,
of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have all sorts of alternative comics. But I love that. And but it was... L.A. was really amazing to just be doing comedy in the 90s.
Yeah. Didn't Janine Garofalo?
Mm-hmm.
She was a big part of that as well.
Yeah,
right?
She's great. And, you know, influenced us all.
Uh-huh. And then what about the store? Like,
the store, I actually, the Comedy Store for me became much more of a place that I would be in recently, in the last like 3 years.
I'm so happy that you're there. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I love doing shows there. And then I got to, you know and see Ali Wong there a lot. And then I got to see Bob a lot.
Yeah.
But I really love the Comedy Store.
What do you like about the store? How does the store differ than the Improv?
Well, it's efficiency, because you could feasibly do five or six shows in one night. If you want it.
Belly room, main room.
Yeah, belly room a couple of times.
Yeah.
Main room, original room twice
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
each time. So it's efficiency. So you
mm-hmm.
could park once and perform five times.
That's crazy.
Which I think is, you know, that's making the most of your time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's also the best place of like for hanging out. because you'll see all your friends.
Is there weird vibes there? Like, I always, like, I heard it was haunted. I just heard
It's definitely haunted. But
have you felt anything weird in there?
I don't think so. I mean, my house where I live is haunted. I mean, pretty much any building.
Right now?
Yeah. Any building in Hollywood. Now. Yeah, the house that I live in the valley is haunted.
Like, well, when did you figure that out?
I've been living there for like 20 years. Yeah. And I can see the ghosts and feel them and hear them sometimes. But they don't really hang out. They don't, like, they're kind of not hugely active around.
Yeah. So is it like, you've seen them?
I've seen, there's a couple of dog ghosts.
Dog ghosts?
Yeah, there's like a couple of dogs. There was a dog that lived there before I was there. And then one of my dogs, I see them both every once in a while and I'll feel them around. There's like some ghostly presence. And then there's some lady in there, but it's kind of like...
What, there's a lady in there?
There's some lady that, I don't know, she's been there since like the 1920s, but I haven't seen her.
Oh, man. That's... This place has some of that going on too.
They found
bones in their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
They found bones in the back, and there used to be like a shed that they bulldozed over, and then underneath the news came. So the news came back here, and they're like, "Remember? They did a whole story." And
well, you know what? You're right by is where Rodney Alcala killed one of his victims. Rodney Alcala was the dating show killer. And in the 70s, he was on a TV show called The Dating Show.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and he was also a serial killer. He's in prison now.
But it was this street?
It was on or around the street, yeah. This whole area, the Hillside Stranglers just up the street. There was the head they found in Bronson Canyon.
Yeah.
The head of the flight attendant.
Oh,
and they
found
that was like maybe 4 years ago.
Yeah.
There was hikers up there and they found a head and then they were taking all these pictures with the head.
Jeez.
And then they found like the feet and the hands a couple weeks later.
Is that near Runyon Canyon?
Yeah. It's right near the canyon over.
There is, because I've hiked there quite a bit.
Yeah.
At night, me and my girl, we used to jump the fence.
So
it was pitch black.
Yeah.
And then one night we were walking and there was like these people in hoods, like walking on they're coming the opposite side, but they're listening to some. Have you seen the original Evil Dead?
Yeah, yeah.
That it sounded like a recording, like an Evil Dead recording.
Oh, that's cool.
And they had they're like wearing these hooded things and like listening to this thing. It was scary.
Well, that's there's some meth business that happens. You know, when you get into meth, it gets real goth. And so you got to get, I feel like that's better than going out there in the day and getting sun damage and bit by a rattlesnake.
Yeah.
So better go at night.
How do you coexist with ghosts then? Like, how do you come to terms with
because
it?
Because my mother always sees ghosts everywhere.
Yeah, what, so what's she's up with like, Koreans knowing this?
Oh, it's over there. Over there. This is going to go.
So like because it's like a peninsula or like an island nation, like Japan is the same way where they live on an island where people can't get off. So even if you die, you're still there.
Yeah.
And like, you know, when your relatives die, you still have to like celebrate their like, you know, anniversaries or celebrate their birthdays and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you got to celebrate their death like they'll fuck with you.
Oh.
So it's like, you know, you keep their memory alive by serving them like their favorite foods in Chuseok. Like, you know, it's like Korean Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
You serve all of the dead people their favorite. I mean, you eat it.
Yeah.
But you make all the stuff that you're like, how many love to eat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you make
sure
you make it all. And all the duck.
That's so
and then
duck,
they.
Wait, what is duck?
Duck
it's
is a, like
it's
rice cakes.
Cake.
It's rice cakes.
It's rice
with
cake.
Like sweet red beans. It's really good.
Yeah.
But they make all like those foods for the relatives,
for the
dead relatives.
Yeah. My mom has the scariest Korean like ghost stories and just like superstitious stories. Like when I was growing up, she would like tell. I mean, I still remember them. Like,
yeah,
she told me one where in their house in Seoul, they had a walkaways to the pyeonso. The toilet was on the ground, like in the shed.
Yeah,
and they told me stories of how this little girl like would fell into the the pool hole.
Mm-hmm.
And like how her, like just scary stories like that. And how,
oh, yeah,
that ghost occupies that area.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She told me a dream. Her younger sister got run over by an American army truck,
mm-hmm,
walking to school. She was lagging behind.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mom, when she was older, had a dream of her being in a cemetery,
mm-hmm,
and her, like, her little sister out of the grave, like reaching for her, like, Ani Iriwa. Yeah, it was
sad.
But that scares me. That scares me. That's like,
so sad.
And she thinks, she always like tells me, like, if she thinks if she would have went in the dream, she would have died.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she takes it, she took it to the extreme.
Took it to that level.
Yeah, took it to that level.
I mean, it's like, yeah, that kind of thing. It's very, yeah, that's very, well, Koreans are very like superstitious.
Yeah,
and
what,
they love
what is
that.
It about? Like,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I don't know. I'm going through kind of like some of that. My sister, she's not my sister. She's not my biological sister, but yeah, my friend from childhood died of an overdose 2 weeks ago.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. But yeah, I'm going to her memorial next week.
Oh.
And I'm like, it's weird to me because I'm like totally like, you know, like I should be the one that's dead, but you know, she's dead. And so like, I wonder if like they're going to have her ashes there, and I really want to snort them. Like, I'm like, cause I, you know, I'm going to ask her mom, yeah, if I can have some of her ashes, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to snort,
her ashes.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to.
That's so crazy.
I kind of have to.
Yeah.
Cause Keith Richards did that for his dad.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. He got his
from
dad's ashes.
Stones?
Yeah. Keith and he snorted his dad's
have you
ashes.
Heard of this?
So I'm pretty sure I'm going to snort her. I don't know if that's a relapse, yeah, though.
No, I don't think it is. CBD's not it either, is it?
I don't know. I think it depends on who you talk to.
Okay. I'm not going to do it. I just thought. I heard it makes you... I have problems going to sleep.
Well, it's not psychoactive. CBD is only like... I think it's only like... I don't know. It doesn't make you high.
Oh, but it calms the body?
I don't know. I've never had it.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Maybe I'm thinking it. Like,
I mean, I've had a lot of weed. I've had a lot of THC, but I've not had any CBD.
Yeah.
So I can't.
Did you used to smoke a lot?
Oh God, yeah.
Me too.
I mean,
I loved it.
I smoked so much weed that I couldn't get high anymore.
But you could perform on it as well.
Yeah, because I wasn't high.
You could do a
show. Yeah, because I wasn't high. Because I didn't feel anything.
You could perform on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you perform like that? Baked.
Because it just wasn't, it wasn't doing anything, and so I wasn't feeling like high. It was weird. Like when you smoke as much weed as I have, mm-hmm, then after a, you know, and your weed is so strong too now.
Nowadays.
It's so strong.
Yeah.
But I, and then I was dabs.
Oh, you did dabs?
Yeah.
Damn.
So, I mean, when you smoke dabs, it's like.
Yeah. I see, I got sober. Dabs happened because I have 10 years now.
Uh-huh.
And dabs was already happened after. I was already sober and like the dab thing happened.
Dabs,
what's that like? What's that
it's
like?
It's fucked up.
Explain that. Like, is it
it's
a
like,
vape thing? Or?
Well, no. You have to like heat up like this glass or whatever like thing to make it like red hot. So you need like a blowtorch to get it as hot as possible.
Have you guys dabbed?
It's like smoking crack.
Oh.
And then you get like a little piece of the dab, which is like a waxy like oil or whatever.
Is
it's
it
very
resin?
Sticky. It's resin pretty much, but it's like super purified.
Mm-hmm.
And then you dip it on there and the white smoke that comes out's pure THC. And then if you ingest that smoke, if you can get it down, it's so harsh that it just makes your lungs on fire.
Oh.
But if you can just get it down, you will get such a magically like transfer of THC just straight into your bloodstream. Like it's so strong that you're just fucking high. Like it's crazy.
It's but crazy. The camera guy's smiling the whole time you're.
But the hard thing is getting it so your body doesn't reject it. Like so immediately, like the smoke is so dense that your lungs seize. Cause it's like, I can't, like your lungs are like, I can't breathe. You know, because it's like that white, pure, like it's like a ghost entering your lungs. Cause
damn,
it's so white and so dense.
Wow.
And
how much more higher do you get doing dabs?
Oh well, it's there.
Is
you
it
can't
a different
even
level?
You can't compare.
Jason, it's
it's more of a high.
You can't really compare it. I mean, it's not even like eating it. You know, like edibles get you super high, but it's different.
I almost got fired from Amoeba eating edibles.
Yeah.
I couldn't. They asked me to come to the cash register. I didn't know what to put in the register.
It's like that, but you have more control over your body.
Yeah.
You're high, but you're not like debilitated like edibles. Because edibles are like... Yeah. It's like crack. It's like a rush, but it's also like a familiar rush because it's weed.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, dabs are one thing that I'm like, kind of miss it because it's
the artistry
of like getting also like a dab rig when you get like a crazy rig.
What's a rig?
A rig is like your bong, like a dab
pipe.
So there's
a dab bong.
You have to have a specific kind of rig that has a nail, which the nail is like the superheated element.
Yeah.
And then you put the wax or whatever on the nail, and then it's like it has to be red hot, and then it just goes white smoke, and all of the dab rigs are quite inventive because you have to invest some money into it. They get dirty pretty quickly.
So where do you get dab? Like, where do you just walk into a marijuana dispensary?
They'll have it.
And then do you buy a gram? Like, you get it through grams?
You would buy it in the same way. It's like shatter.
Yeah.
But you buy it. It's more expensive than
weed. How much more than just like a nugget of weed?
It's a lot more expensive.
It's a lot more.
Because it's so concentrated. It's so super, super concentrated because you're basically just getting the resin. I mean, you're getting the THC from, it's like almost like, no plant element. So no plant material. It's 100% psychoactive THC.
What would happen to me? I used to get paranoid on weed, but what would happen to me after 10 years of sobriety and I did a big dab hit?
I don't know, because I think it really affects everybody differently. And I don't think you would get as paranoid. I think paranoia builds up over time.
Yeah.
When you have more of an awareness of how this affects you, I think you would just be high.
Yeah.
And then maybe the paranoia would come a little later. I don't know exactly. For dabs, I didn't find that paranoia was an issue because people were way too high to even think about it.
Oh my God. So dabs, man.
Dabs are on next level.
It's next level. God. Man, maybe I got
sober
during the
dabbing,
a long time.
Dabbing with a gravity bong, which
what's that? What's that? I know what
bong. I actually had a good gravity. I had like a mini gravity bong.
Yeah.
No, it was one that I bought, but it was one that it was like weird because you would just like flip it upside down and it was like kind of like a weird gravity bong that was almost like an hourglass.
Yeah.
And you would just flip it over and then the water would come up and what they use the water to shove the smoke down your throat. And it's different.
Yeah.
But the thing about the gravity bong that's not good is that it uses up so much weed.
Oh, it does.
So one hit is a gram and that's not. It's not economic.
Wow, dude. The marijuana game is so different now, huh?
It's also the same.
Yeah.
You know, you could just smoke it. I mean, plus if you've been sober for a long time, if you smoked it now, you get so high anyway.
Yeah.
The dab would just be like way too intense.
Yeah, I think
you'd fall asleep.
Yeah, I think a normal like kush.
Just a hit would
just knock me out.
Yeah, I think that like dabs would just fall asleep.
Yeah. So are you guys big dab guys or what's the deal? He loves dabs.
It's like you can't go back to smoking weed when you have dabs because it's like there's just no way to go back.
Yeah.
Because it's like then it's like nothing. Weed is like nothing.
And I don't know what I'm talking about, but it feels like it's better for my lungs.
It is.
I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm not a doctor, but it feels like it's better for my lungs.
It might be because you're not ingesting a lot of plant material. It's not combusting. So it's like maybe the carcinogen level is like different. It may be lower because you're not like, you know, the plant material is kind of where all the combustion and that sort of like damage carcinogens get in there. But the smoke with dabs is so white and dense. It just goes right to those receptors or whatever. I don't know what receptors are the THC receptors are.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels terrible at first and then
it hurts.
And it feels better afterwards.
Yeah.
He says it feels terrible at first and then it feels better. So
yeah.
I like walking over there. I like getting it too. Yeah. Okay.
It's definitely, you know, it's something that I came too late in my pot career.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in my house, what I would do is people would come over and I would make, I would take absinthe and I would heat it up with green tea and then I would put pot butter in there and then it would give them the steaming cup of it. Damn. And it was called the Green Fairy.
Wow.
And people would come over and they would fall asleep. And I was like, my whole house is all pillows.
Like opium
and it was like an opium den. And they would fall, like I could steal kidneys. I could just... All these comics would come over and they would not show up to their shows that night. And they're like, where are you? We went to Margaret's. Oh, that's what happened. So it was like this weird black hole that, you know, comics would come and they would never leave.
There's quite a few like successful comedians that they're like avid weed smokers. And
that they can get it together.
I don't understand how they could perform like high like that.
I mean, some comics, they can get it together. I mean, you know, I can't do it because I like other drugs also in the same way.
Right.
So marijuana in itself is not harmful. To me, it's not a big deal, but because of my love for everything else, it becomes a problem.
Wow, that's interesting. So like, as far as, because there might be some comics that look up to you, like what, do you have any like, I always ask the comedians this, like the OGs, like what suggestions could you give to like aspiring comedians like to be on the right road to like,
well, just doing
8 to 9 specials.
Just to do it, just to enjoy it. And
how many mics do they have to hit up?
Well, when I was starting, I was going every day, more than one, as many as I could, and trying to do
every day,
seven days a week. And it was really fun.
Yeah.
Like you gotta love it.
You gotta
love
it.
You have to enjoy.
That's the main thing, right?
That's the whole, if you love it, then it's perfect.
Yeah.
You know?
Have you ever bombed?
Oh, all the time.
Like how did you?
I still bomb.
You bomb?
Yeah, I still bomb.
No way.
Well, you gotta like space it out. Like I'll bomb within the framework of a show. Like I'll do badly in a show for a couple minutes and then I'll bring it back. It's good again.
How do you deal with that? Like
you just try stuff and if it doesn't work, you just keep going. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Because if you perform enough, bombing is like not a big deal.
Right.
You know,
because
it's like if you're performing every day, it's got to be the dailiness of it.
Would you say it's a part of being a comedian? Like you have to bomb.
Yeah. And the best comics bomb a lot.
Bill Burr bombs.
Well, people that I think always take risks and always want to grow really take that as like they go, OK, well, I understand that this is going to, you know, take some time to figure out.
Yeah.
So they trust that and it's fine.
Have you seen a comedian get on stage and just do, they don't even know what they're about to do. They just kind of freestyle their whole set.
Yeah, but I think that sometimes it can go badly. You know, you kind of should know where you're going a little bit.
A little bit.
And a little bit also goes a long way. It's good to not waste anybody's time. So you should, that's the thing. It's like audiences want to feel like they're in good hands.
Mm-hmm,
they don't want to be like, well, fucking around. They need to trust you. And I think that is an important covenant to have.
So when you're first starting, how did you first come up with like a 3 minute that works, then a 5 minute, then a 10, like how'd you build up to that?
Well, I was doing it every day and then I had jokes and I was trying to figure it out and I was super young. And mm-hmm. so like,
how old were you when you first started?
I started when I was 14.
You started comedy when you're 14
years
old?
Yeah. So I was still so young that all the jokes that I was doing were like kids jokes. And then I realized, oh, I have to do more adult jokes. And then so I kept trying to figure it out. But, you know, you just kept trying. You kept on thinking, well, I'll do this and this and this and maybe this will work. And, you know, I just got by.
Wow. What drove you as a 14-year-old to like get on stage like that and do that?
I just wanted to be a comedian, and I knew that right away. And I was in like a theater program at school, so mm-hmm. I had this teacher who was signing me up for open mics.
In Frisco up there?
Yeah. So there was opportunities that were presented.
Wow.
And I was doing comedy in school.
Yeah.
And you know, so we were doing it in class, and so we were able to take it out and do it at night in clubs, which is great.
Amazing. Have you ever thought of opening up your own comedy school to teach?
No, that's an interesting thing.
You could
teach it.
Yeah, dude, you're the people, you could, you know how like Eddie Bravo's got jujitsu schools all around the world? You could have like a Margaret Cho Institute of Comedy, man.
Yeah, that would
be great. Right, guys?
Yeah, let's do it.
She could.
Yeah.
You don't think so? Well, I could totally see that.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
If not you, who else is better suited?
Lots of people could do it.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's something that experience teaches you better than school.
Oh.
You know, it's more like all of the different experiences doing it.
Are there
the best
comedy
teachers.
Schools?
I don't know. I mean, there's
you guys
like
know?
There's like improv schools, yeah, and there's like sketch comedy schools.
I'm talking about stand-up school.
Yeah, there's not really. Well, there's like UCB, but they don't really do stand-up shows.
That'd be interesting.
I mean, they do stand-up shows, but they don't have. I don't know. Do they have classes?
I have no idea. That's. I'm just putting it out there. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't. What George took a class. Yeah, all right. Oh, Dan teaches one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yours is going to, it would be worldwide, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you opened one, it would just be sold out.
Yes.
Then you'd open one in Oregon, then Seattle.
A dojo.
Then one in,
yeah, that'd be cool.
Margaret Cho Dojo of Comedy.
All right.
No? Okay. Maybe in a few years. Or
maybe.
Yeah. I'm just really concerned. I love my brother and I want him to.
Yeah, he should do a special.
Yeah, I really
but
really
you know,
want
he will.
Him to.
He will.
I just hope.
He's
what do you think,
to.
Bryce? It's time, right?
It's due.
And I think it's now. He has to do it now.
Yeah.
This year.
Yeah, he really should. I don't know why he hasn't.
Where do you think he should film it?
I like the Wiltern. I think it's good, but
yeah.
he could also do it at the Comedy Store, which I think is a great place.
That's his backyard.
Yeah, and he loves it there.
Has it changed? Has that place changed from when Tommy was there to like Adam now?
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't there when Tommy was there.
Oh,
so I don't know.
Oh, okay.
But it's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
I was just wondering.
Yeah.
I was wondering. Yeah. Do you have anything like, are you working on a new act?
Yeah. And I'm doing shows. I'm going to Cincinnati this week.
This week?
Yeah. This weekend. I'm doing shows. And I'm going to, where am I going? Everywhere. I'm always everywhere.
Yeah. That's awesome. Is this all new material?
Yeah. I always try to do like new stuff and. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
wow.
Over time. Yeah,
that's so cool. Mm-hmm. It makes me happy to know that like you're still doing it. And
yeah,
it's like,
you got to.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so, are you as far as because you've done so many? Are you going to be? The trajectory is it towards a new special too?
Yeah, but I think I am going to do one later because I've done some, and then I think I might do. Well, I'm trying to do a theater show for something else, so I might do that first, and then do another special.
You do music as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask about that? Like what kind of music are you?
Well, this last weekend I sang, I sing with an orchestra, which is very special. So this weekend I did with the Red Room Orchestra in New York. We were at the Symphony Space and we did the music of Twin Peaks and the music of Wes Anderson films. So it's
that,
cool.
You can't get much better than that.
Yeah, it's really cool.
David Lynch and then Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
I love his work.
Yeah. I sing the Roy Orbison songs, which are really hard to sing.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
So is it going to be recorded? Where could the viewers like listen to these albums?
I don't know. Because it's live and it's with the orchestra. For me, it's just like
performing.
Performing with my friends. And, you know, it's like these sort of very highbrow events. We did it at Sketchfest in San Francisco. And so then I joined them again for this.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it'll be out there. You know, we should probably make a record some point.
Yeah. Because, dude, wouldn't you guys want to check that out?
It's very cool.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
So, singing, comedy, is there something? Then sketch as well?
I don't really do sketches.
Oh, but you had a one-woman show, though.
Well, yeah. But that's more like...
Yeah.
It's actually just stand-up comedy, really.
Oh, okay.
Theater stuff, yeah.
God, that's awesome. How are we doing on time, guys? Good? Did we reach an hour?
Yeah, hour and 2 minutes.
Hour and 2 minutes. I think that's good. Can we? So, is there any way we could? Bryce, did you want to ask her something?
Sorry, Jason. You always start with me. I'm gonna start with Bryce. What are you looking forward to? Where do you want to take your comedy career? Is there anything outside comedy, music, entertainment, or?
good question.
Artistic or
Bryce asks, is there anything outside of a comedy that... Yeah.
Other stuff? Gosh, I don't know. I think that I would love to create a men's clothing line in Japan because they have the best, like, hype beast. Like, I'm kind of like a secret
hype beast?
I'm like a secret hype beast.
Yeah.
But only in, like, Japan.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, super into, like, these, like, Japanese lines, like Neighborhood and Mastermind.
Whoa.
And, you know, of course... Babe and you know like
yeah
all that kind of stuff so but I'm like I want to create like my own but for Japanese men
American
yeah okay. It's like the American yeah, influence yeah. Like they have all these like American like reproduction clothes like the Real McCoy so I kind of want to go in that vein but like specifically to for a Japanese male audience. Mm. And I want everybody to look...
Why Japanese? Why the Japanese
audience?
Well,
it's because it's just... It's like the aesthetic is just so perfect. Like, it's just like... And then, of course, if it's for the Japanese audience. It's actually for Japan and Korea.
Yeah.
For Europe. And I mean, it kind of filters out from there.
Mm-hmm.
So if I did a... Because I've done a clothing line before, but if I did another one, it would be for men in Japan. They would all look like Robert De Niro in Cape Fear.
Nice. I love that movie, by the way. Great movie.
But it's like
great
a line
movie.
Like yeah. devoted to looking like you could be hanging underneath somebody's car.
Yeah, leather. Have you guys seen this movie?
It's really good.
Jason, did you have a question for Margaret?
Who were your influences when you were like 14?
Yeah, where you're... Yeah, that's a good one. Influences when she was 14.
What I'm getting at with this, did you ever find like older kids especially funny up to a certain age?
Yeah, definitely.
The kids who were like any age older than me, I always thought everything that they said was hilarious.
And cool.
Yeah.
Like older kids were always really funny and yeah, for sure. And also like, well, the comics that I liked... I really love David Cross. David Cross, as a stand-up comedian, he was like everybody's hero.
Mm-hmm.
Like we loved him so much. And he would just do these things that were just really ridiculous and crazy. And we would really, really laugh.
Mm-hmm.
I really love the kids in the hall when they came to America. It was like the Beatles coming to America.
Mm-hmm.
And they were always like, they were super influential and really great. Mm-hmm. I always like worship Wanda Sykes. Like she was to me like the ultimate who to be, you know, like I wanted to be like her more than anybody like her. She was the best.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, lots of people. But yeah, a little bit older than me would be like Kids in the Hall, a little bit older, Bubby David.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like the absurdist stuff is always really fun.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
I like that. We had fun. Our 100th episode
네.
With Kamsahamnida.
Kamsahamnida. Thank you. 네.
Thank you. I'm so nervous.
네. I'm going to pray for you.
Okay. We have, so that's our 100th episode.
네.
I have to shout out. Before we end, can you plug, what's your Instagram?
Instagram is Margaret_Cho.
C-H-O.
Margaret, M-A-R-G-A-R-E-T underscore C-H-O.
Okay.
There's some funny Photoshops in there.
Okay. Yeah. So definitely check that out and follow. And then your face. Do you have a website as well?
MargaretCho.com. And it's at Margaret Cho on Twitter.
Okay. And then Facebook.
Everything. Yeah.
Everything Margaret Cho. We have a lot of new patrons on our Patreon this week. I want to shout them out. So let's welcome Timothy Dueno, Mandy, Mike Garcia, Zahidi, Guerrero, Keanu, Maui, Gavero, Noels, Benzi, Noah, Ferris, Mona, McCoon, DeAndre, Calif, Pita, Kerry, Clark, McKenzie, and my man Ted Padulo. And for the music on my Bandcamp, we have people who bought music. Alexander Burkett bought it one song. but Sang Hong Joseph Ong bought all 13 albums.
Woo!
I really like that.
Yeah.
So please be like Sang Hong and buy all 13. Wow. And my man Brian Chick bought 3 albums. So you can get the music on stevieweebybandcamp.com. If you want to be a patron, please join our Patreon family at patreon.com/stevieweeby. I do a weekly diary log, right, Bryce?
And more on the way.
And there's more on the way, and there's merch on the way. We're sending out for shirts as we speak, right? Okay. If you want to follow the show, please follow Instagram/QUANGOU. If you want to send anything physical, send it to the Stevie Weeby Show, 1425 North Cherokee Avenue, P.O. Box 1391, L.A., California, 90093. Thank you so much. It was an honor.
Nah.
With that being said, nah, kamsahamnida.
Nah, kamsahamnida.
It's time for Lil Ray's World.
Welcome to Lil Ray's World Show. All I gotta say is kids' minds must grow. I got abducted by some aliens and dropped in snow. Whoa. Stuck into a world that I do not know. So join me in adventures now. And I promise not to have a cow. My name is Little Ray. Hey, hey. My name is Little Ray. Hey, hey, hey. So welcome to my world. To all the boys and girls.
Welcome to Little Ray's World. Hee-haw!
Is that a goddamn calzone or what? Oh, mamma mia. Mamma mia. Mamma mia. Beep, what the hell is he talking about and why does he keep saying mamma mia? Beep, 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 beep. So let me get this straight, man. You were a short little Italian man. And your neighbors, the Balotellis, hated you. You somehow owed some money towards a mafia family in Rome, and they sent you a letter to pay him back, and the Balotellis decided to take the drone out, and it sliced your neck open? Yes. Mamma mia. Mamma mia. That makes no sense whatsoever, but me and Beep wrote a song and it goes like this.
This one's about Polly the Calzone, man.
Polly the Calzone, man, woo!
Polly the Calzone, he lived at home on his phone. He never left the house, that's something that his wife condoned. The neighbors hated Polly cause they thought he was a clone. Polly always wore cologne, shorter than your average nomicide clone. Purgatory planet, man. We're hungry.
Join us in 2 weeks, man, for another episode of Little Ray's World.